Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's wrong.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, Norbury, Sacks and Jacks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. It's a rainy, rainy day in Chicago. Chicago doesn't quite rhyme with Georgia. It's a rainy day in Georgia. No, Chicago's not the same. S&P futures up 12. NASDAQ futures up 71. If you haven't figured it out, if you're buried under a rock someplace, today is election day. Although it seems like I'm kind of stunned here. Forget how many people tell me that they went and voted like on a weekend, and it took them. They had to wait in line for 2 hours, and I'm like, boy, oh boy. I've never had a district that I had to wait ever, really, so I guess I'm blessed or something. We have Carl?
Yes, we do.
You do.
How are you, bud? So I'm going to get home, I'm going to walk out the front door, I'm going to make a left, I'm going to walk 200 feet, I'm going to walk in, there'll be nobody there, and I get to vote for 300 judges, and I don't know who the hell they are. So there
you you know, yeah. Well, I early voted, which, and that I actually cast a real vote on the top of the ticket. It's first time in five election cycles that I've done that. I did not vote for Obama, and I did not vote for his opponent. I did not vote for Trump, and I did not vote for his opponent. So that's, you know, five votes, right? And then, you know, but this time I did. And, you know, it's interesting. Who said freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction, and a people that have lost it never get it back?
And I don't know. Whoever it was, pretty true.
It's Ronald Reagan during his inauguration, not as president, but as governor of California. And then Ronald Reagan, as president, in a deal with the Speaker of the House, regularized several million illegal immigrants, who at the time predominantly resided in California, permanently shifted that state from Republican to Democrat, along with all of their electoral votes, and put us on the path that we are on to either ratify or repudiate today.
I'm going to say that Silicon Valley did almost as much for that, and Berkeley and those kinds of places as
absolutely. Okay, but again, that which you set in motion, you know, I mean, if I push a rock off the top of a hill, and by the way, it's really snowy, yeah, right?
How different would the politics in this country be if they ever let any Irish in?
Well, the whatabouts are all wonderful, except here we are today, okay? And in the last 3.5 years, almost 4 years now, the literal flooding of this country, in some cases, in some the scale of this thing is unbelievable. There are a couple of nations in Central America that have seen 5 and 6, 6, 7% of their population come into the United States in the last 3.5 years.
Well,
think about the scale of that, Chief. It's insane. Okay, you also have, all right, Janet Yellen, who will obviously not be replaced if Harris wins, because, you know, it's a Biden-Harris appointee, okay, who threw several hundred billion dollars into the economy in a insane attempt to essentially buy the election for Harris right after the start of the new fiscal year. That inflationary spike is going to happen early next year, no matter who wins. Can't be taken back out because it's already
right,
happened.
So you didn't vote for somebody, you voted against somebody.
Well, I had to vote against somebody because in addition to that, that same administration illegally shifted money into Medicare Part D to prevent a more than 100% premium spike that was supposed to happen this year, just before the elections. Okay, because now it's open enrollment season, you know, was for Medicare and also for Obamacare. That was going to happen this year. There was no way around it. And by the way, what led to that was all of this craziness with Ozempic and these other extremely high-priced and quite dangerous drugs.
So the flip side of that is, actually, I got some very specific questions to ask you this morning about the labor numbers, but the flip side of that is the Republicans have always rode herd on the pharmaceuticals.
I am by no stretch of the imagination saying that I believe that we're going to necessarily change the path, okay? Because and if you know, I haven't been on your show long enough for you to know, you know, from personal experience, the experience of what was going on when Trump was president, and then of course when the crazy started, okay, with COVID. You know, I came on your show during the middle of this time, right? All the way back to 2016, when that election was being contested. To say that I was unkind to both the people who were running would be the, you know,
well,
would be the.
Let me ask you.
But here's the problem, Chief. All right, all these things are true. But as I got into it with a friend of mine the other night, I said, look. Because I was having a conversation with them, and we were talking about we both early voted, all right. So we've made our decision.
Well, you can't fight about elections if you already voted.
Well, they were maintaining that Trump is Hitler, that sort of stuff, right?
He's unstable.
What I said to that person is this: I said, look. I said, both these people have records that are now that are 4 years old. They both had an administration, okay? So the question is this. This parade of horribles that you claim is going to occur if Trump wins, can you name one of them that actually did during the time that he was president in the United States? Just one. I would like you, debate.
I can't, the parade of horribles, but he had a rough term in the sense that he was just starting to get warmed up, and then the COVID slapped him up against the wall, and he couldn't do much that he really wanted to do.
Chief, that was the last year of his...
Last year. Well, it was February of 20, which was last year, yeah. You're right.
It was the last year. The previous three...
Well, he couldn't get anything going because he kept firing everybody all around him.
Well, he couldn't get anything going because he had articles of impeachment filed against him on the first day of his
administration. He also had every single person that how many people did he fire? What was the guy from Exxon? He fired him.
Oh, Chief, I am not saying I like the guy. Okay, please.
Oh, it's a horrible. I have just one question. I don't know what's going to happen today. I have my personal feel what's going to happen today, but it doesn't.
Well, I do too. And the one thing that I'm reasonably sure of is that by the time I go to bed tonight, we're going to know who won.
I think we are too. And I
don't think it's going to be close. I think it. One thing that has happened, and this is the good thing that came out of 2020 and all the craziness, okay, that followed it. Nobody is willing to put up with the shenanigans. There have been multiple judges in multiple places, including a couple of state Supreme Courts, that have said, we're not doing this. You guys that think that you're going to change rules at the last minute, you're going to stretch the... not happening this time. And in Michigan in particular, in most states, the fact that you voted and how you voted is a public record. Who you voted for, obviously, is not. But that you did is. And a couple of people in Michigan got tired of the shenanigans with Cobo Hall. Well, I guess it's not called that anymore, but all the crap that went on in 2020 with that, and set up real-time data polls out of there and detected 29 ballots voted on one voter ID, flagged it immediately, within hours of it happening, and it was intercepted and stopped before it got into the canvas. So people on all sides are saying, however this thing goes, this game ain't being played the way it was last time.
They're 4 years into this with learning how to do this, and they're going to be way better. I agree.
Well, I think it's good. Okay, I mean, you know, yeah. The one thing look, if I go to bed tonight and you know, whichever side has won, I think I'm going to be reasonably confident that person actually did win.
Well, as somebody who used to be a Democrat, now I don't know kind of where they went.
you've got the same problem. I've got it on the other side.
I guess
side,
my question is if Trump gets trounced, can we go back to getting a real Republican Party that I can be happy to vote for the guy next time?
You know, this is always the issue. You know, I was on Coffee and Mike last night. We did a couple hour long podcast. It's big, so I mean, you know, a lot of people will say, well, you know, it's like listening to Rogan. Some people just won't do it because of the length. And that was one of the points that I made, is that you know, in so many issues, whether it be immigration, whether it be abortion, pick one, right? The American people, 90% of the American people are somewhere in the middle,
without a doubt, and they have right. nobody. They have nobody,
and the right, and the crazies are on both ends, and by anybody else's standard than those people, those positions are nuts.
What let me ask you this: How did I gotta stop? I gotta stop asking you these questions because these are interesting stuff. But I gotta stop 5 minutes ago because I got specific questions about the labor stuff and strikes
yeah,
and
yeah.
things like that and how they're all counted. How did we, wasn't that long ago? I mean, I know I'm not 25 anymore, but in Clinton's time and in, you know, I'm saying the 90s, maybe right. even the early 2000s, your job as the liberal, well, I don't say liberal, the Democrat, because the Democrats weren't all that left when I was a Democrat, and Republicans really weren't all that right on tax issues and stuff. They were, but on all this other stuff, it was not really there. You had to go to the. If I'm a Democrat, I had to go to the tree hugger, which was about as left as you could get in those days. Talk to the guy, hold my nose, and get the check and walk out of there, basically.
Right.
And a Republican had to do the same thing. You had to go to the guy in Wyoming and tell you about how everybody else in the world is bad, but old white guys in Wyoming. You held your nose and you got the check. Okay, but then you walked back to the center, and the best at it was Clinton, because he couldn't even, by the time he was out the door, he forgot what he promised the guy, right? And he was perfect at that. Now Bush, on the other hand, didn't have the backbone to do that. He actually did start a war for the neocons, and oh, by the way, he cut taxes at the same time.
Right.
And you could trace...
Which, by the way, is nutty.
Yeah, if he would have said, we're invading Iraq... by the way, there's a 10% tax surcharge this year. We would never have done it.
Well, yeah.
So, but you know, you mentioned the immigration, and by the way, the only reason why I ever push back on this is I try and get more of a history of it than you know the people who just talk about the people coming here, and you don't do that much. But sometimes I'm saying that the what is it the song say. The world is alive with the sound of music. Well, the world is alive with the sounds of people not being able to live damn near any place on this earth. I mean, we busted up Iraq, which was really foolish, because as bad as Saddam Hussein was, people could live there.
We made it worse.
Yeah, but how many refugees did? What we think that we're getting stuck in the ass with these all these you know immigrants. And to a certain extent, we are. I'm not going to deny that. What do you think the poor guy who runs Jordan feels, Carl? He's got more immigrants than he does people. And somehow, you know, I don't know if I'd want to go live in Jordan. But this is a worldwide problem. I mean, I don't know what you do about a country like Venezuela or some of the ones in Central America. They haven't gotten any better since I was in college, for God's sake. And we've done nothing but send them money. Where did all that money go?
Well, it went in politicians' pockets.
Yeah,
here
and there.
More than there and there, but here was the reason we did it. Okay, because obviously, you know, the guy over there doesn't get any of our people rich. Yeah, I mean, it's the grift is ridiculous, but this is, you know, we had the labor report, okay, that came out, and one of the things that I put up, just I think it actually posted yesterday morning, is on the whole situation with the yield curve and the fact that nobody in the markets today, except maybe Buffett, the Buffett's really the exception. He's also 95. Okay.
Yeah.
No one in the markets today has been on the other side of this long cycle, which incidentally has always been the case. Okay. It's normally a 30-ish year cycle of higher rates and lower rates. And
well, I surely have.
Well, not really, though, Chief.
What do you mean? Okay. I was in terms of when interest rates were 18%. I was here.
No, I understand that, but you weren't there in the 1950s when they were 3. Okay, and so you didn't live through as a market participant and as a professional the upward movement. You saw the top of it. Yeah, so did I.
I don't want to show my age, but I actually did. I certainly remember these savings and loans where you got 2.5-3% on your passbook. The mortgage is 5.5-6%, and the difference was the buildings, the people, and the Little League uniforms. And it was actually fairly efficient.
But it went straight up
from there. It started in 68.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Chief. Okay, yeah, in 68, okay, is when it started. But before that, remember, you had the repression that happened, you know, after World War II and during World War II.
Well, I missed that.
Well, of course you did. Yeah. Well, of course you did. Yeah. That's the point, is that you did not live through a whole side of the other cycle.
Right. I got a solid two-thirds of the other side.
Well, but you didn't live through the whole thing. I didn't live through the whole thing. Buffett didn't even live through the whole thing. But he's the closest to anybody that has.
You're right. You could trace... virtually all of this is going off the gold standard, which I don't think was, you know, I mean, I do remember, I must have been in the early 60s, I was really young, I don't even think I was in high school yet. Matter of fact, I'm sure it wasn't. I remember De Gaulle sending dollars over on a ship and demanding gold. But
remember something, that going off the gold standard was a response to what ended up being the top of, that cycle, because people prior to that hadn't lived through one of them either. Okay, and so here we are in today's world. When after the crash in 08, when we started to come out of it in the 09-10 time frame, I remained extraordinarily unconvinced that we were coming out of it, because what I saw in the data was that cycle was ended. That was the end of it. Okay, when we had that happen,
right, for the middle class.
Well, as it turned out, that was not true. Okay, it was extended, as it turns out. So, we got a. I need to get in here. From Joel, do you want to? I can hang around, so I'm not. I'm not time limited. It sounds like he is.
Okay. Well, why don't you hang a little bit. He was in the command till 6:30, unless he didn't forget to change his clock.
Well, he just there's a thing in the chat that says if you want me, I need to come on now.
All right, why don't we get him on quick? Because I want to ask you about strikes and hurricanes and how they affect the numbers, and where exactly do the revisions go, and are there revisions to the household survey? So I got four questions for you.
Yep.
Ricky, if Joel wants in, let's get him in for a few minutes. He must have to go someplace, and we'll bring Carl back.
Okay, sounds good. Do you want to go on break?
No, we'll just go. We'll just go to Joel right now.
Okay, yeah, he's in. Joel, you're on.
Joel, you're on, bud.
Hey, good morning. Good morning. What is this, Passover with the four questions?
Well, we had all those numbers last week. We had the big number down. Then all I was reading about was the people on strike and how that could have been 44,000 of the people. But then they had a big revision the months before, and Carl always talk about, and I always talk about the establishment versus household. My question would be, is there a revision to the household? I never saw one.
Well, hey, I'm sorry to break in early today.
Please do. Go ahead.
Interrupt with you, Kyle. And no, I didn't forget to change my clock. I have some breaking news.
You're president.
No, I'm not running for president. No, they've called me and yeah, the write-in vote. No, Dennis and I are no longer with Benzinga.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. After several years, we've decided to grow our own ways and put out some of our own content on our own channel.
Congratulations, yep. Bud.
Yeah, which is premarketprep.com. And the reason I need to come out early is we're doing some prep right now to get the new news station ready to go. I will be on next Tuesday, okay, if the world is still here, to talk about the markets. I'll just real quick for your listeners. There's a base. The bulls are making their case at 57.25, 57.30. It's held up four different times. I don't know about no election. I don't know no politics. If we hold that level, boom, the bull continues. We're going to go back up to 59 and change. If somehow the bears press it through there, we got some more downside a little bit deeper in the correction. But I just wanted to thank you, Chief. I'll be back on next Tuesday. Premarketprep.com. We'll be broadcasting for a couple hours this morning. And so I wanted to get some cheap advertising in.
Well, you know what, though? We're gonna talk more about that, and maybe one of these days I can be a guest. We'll see.
Oh, Chief, you're on the radar. Hey, Carl, thanks for letting me sneak in here, guys. As always, go blue. We are now a basketball.
Hey, are you guys going to beat Indiana, for God's sake?
No. I don't even know if I'm going to watch the game. I went to the basketball game last night. I don't have time to rant about my basketball team, but we're a basketball school now, Chief. Okay. You got to be flexible.
You know, the last time you told me that, you won the national title in football.
All right, go blue.
All right. Talk about football, Carl. He's the most contra-party indicator. All he did was rant about how bad the football team was the year they won the national championship, and it was now a basketball school. The basketball program falls apart, and the football program wins the national title. So,
oh man.
Anyway,
well, you know, I mean, of course, here being in Tennessee and actually kind of being into it, you know, the Vols is the thing. The Titans, nobody really cares about at all.
Is that true? I tell you what, did I mention, when I talk about stupid stuff, I remember this little Australian young lady that I met touring the country a week ago, who was an absolute riot, was touring stadiums, and she loved the one in Nashville, the Titans place. So it was a really nice place.
I've never been inside it.
I drove by it. It looks awesome, especially as they put it up for about the same time as Soldier Field for like a third of the cost. It looks gorgeous.
Yeah, well, I mean, it looks great from the outside, but I've never actually been inside. I mean, but you know,
I think she took a tour.
Around here, Neyland is the big thing, right? And I'll tell you some of the stuff that we talk a lot about the NIL stuff and you know, the distortions it's put into the system and a lot of people rag about it and the crazy influence that athletic departments have in colleges and stuff like this, right? But I will say this, the AD here earns the money. And yeah, it's priced me out. I don't, you know, I would love to go to a game. I'd love to go do it. They've priced me out. And it's just simply because I'm not paying $300 to park the car where I can tailgate.
Is that the list, or where you have to pay somebody to get one?
No, it's just, well, there is no list, okay, anymore, because they've become so successful. The only way you're doing any of it is through resales. All right, same thing with tickets.
So it doesn't have. I mean, the ticket used to have a price on it. Of course, now they don't because they're on your phone. But
right,
the parking pass, I think.
Let's put it this way: a nosebleed seat will cost you $300 to $400.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, and that's nosebleeds.
I think the parking pass at the good place, if you actually want to tailgate in Notre Dame, is last time I saw the actual placard you hung on your window was like $1.25. But try and get one for under $4. That was four.
Well, I'm just saying
it's
the same thing. Okay, it's the same kind.
But you can park out in the street 8 blocks away if you feel like walking, which I can do.
Well, yeah, and I mean, and I can park in the, you know, in the municipal garage. It's, you know, it's a couple miles, but I mean, it's not a bad walk. But I mean, yeah, I can, but they priced me out. But I do watch it. I refuse to pay for ESPN and the one network channel when they're not at home I cannot get here at the house with the antenna is ABC, which is what they're on. So, you know, I throw a little bit of money to the local drinking establishments and go watch it over there. But it's they have, for good or for bad, so far the local economy is absorbing it, and you know the AD's earning his money. So and there you go.
Well, the dude at
I want to get back on your job stuff, because you had four questions and we're going to end up sidetracked, and I want to answer them.
Gee, end up sidetracked? We never do that.
No, that never happens on this show.
No, no. God.
So, the revisions, the establishment survey is the one that gets revised, okay? This last set of revisions was especially egregious because more than half of the jobs that they claimed occurred in August.
Like 172,000, right? For the last 2 months combined.
Yeah, but I mean, it was more than half of August's numbers were revised out.
Really?
I mean, that's insane, okay? That's a problem, at least from my point of view. I think that's kind of serious. And then the other issue, though, that comes up is that you know, you got all this as I pointed out, this thing with healthcare, where the standard prior to the crazy was around $30,000 a month, and it had been that way for 10 years, right? Which I mean is nuts if you think about it, just in terms of population growth. You're saying for every 15 people in the country, we need to have a doctor. Well,
none of them are doctors.
Well, point being, if they were doctors or nurses, there'd be a doctor in every corner, right? And there isn't. So obviously, the vast majority of that ad is not involved in actually making people more healthy. It is involved in taking their money. So you know, there you go. But the turn that we're seeing in that data coincides with the craziness that's going on in the yield curve and with borrowing rates. And one of the things that I think, and this is the alarm bell that's been going off, because what Yellen did was shoving all that cash into the system in the last, you know, the first 2-3 weeks of the fiscal year after it closed in September, right in front of the election. What Harris did,
by the way, they started doing that 3 months ago. 4 months ago.
Oh, I know, yeah. I know, but I'm saying, you know, but there was a huge spike that was dumped right after the close of the fiscal, and
why do you think the market's running up? Duh.
Well, and to be fair, Treasury does this kind of game to make the deficit look better, because, you know, don't spend it till after September 30th, right? So it's not that uncommon, just the magnitude of it was so ridiculous. Then the other thing that you have is this shift that Harris and Biden did with CMS, where they essentially robbed Peter to buy down the Medicare Part D premium increases that were over 100% and were going to happen in open enrollment this year. Okay, so they shifted tens of billions of dollars into that to prevent that from happening during the election. Now that means that whoever wins today, next year, if you're a senior citizen, you're going to get boned, because most of the quotes I've seen in terms of where that would have landed is more than a double, and in many cases it's going to be close to a triple.
You mean in the supplemental insurance,
the Part D premiums,
the
drug premiums?
They've already doubled.
Well, guess what? They're going to double again.
Well, most people, some of my guys are all the stuff that the. All right, well, let's explain this to everybody. Give me a second. If you turn 65 and you now can be covered for Medicare, you once you sign up, you get the Medicare hospital, okay, which comes, I'll use the term included instead of free, to everybody who's over 65. If you want to sign up for the doctor...
Well, that's because you paid into it while you were
Right. You want to sign up for the doctor part, which pretty much everybody does, that's a number, and that comes right out of your Social Security. So if your Social Security is going to be $2,500, your check is $2,250, because it's like $250 a month or $260 a month. And last year, as everybody recalls, I can't believe the administration or anybody got away with it, they essentially gave the Social Security people, say, a... I forget what last year's was, to say 2.8% for inflation, yet the part that you had to pay them went up like 4.5. You know, right. Which is like telling your citizenry, how stupid do we think you are?
Well, obviously very stupid, because they got away with it.
But then there's the supplemental part that you can go get from somebody else, and there's a million different people. The good news with that is, for the first time in your life, if you go to somebody's, there's a whole different list of plans, A, B, C, D, D, all the way down the line.
Right.
For whatever insurance company you go to, maybe do this because they think old people are dumb, or maybe they think it's just supposed to be done that way. The Part B plan at every different insurance company is exactly the same.
Right.
As is the Part C plan or Part D plan. So you can, when you know exactly what you're getting, it's just price. It's not, this one has a $5 deductible, this one has a $7.50, right. None of that kind of crap.
Unlike Advantage, where all those bad things can happen.
Well, right. But then there's also people that, instead of doing like a one where they just pick up your hospital and doctor stuff, there's others that take care of, like, it's more like an HMO. So you can get those instead. But then there's this Medicare Part D, which is the prescription piece. And the prescription piece is sort of interesting, because if you get to 65 and you say, I don't need it, and all of a sudden you get to like 75 and you decide, oh my God, now I need, 15 different drugs a month because something happened to me. They done you for not being part of the plan for 10 years. They like fine you.
Oh, it's and that, by the way, that fine is permanent?
Yeah, it's permanent.
And the other thing that's nasty is that also applies to all the other parts as well.
Yeah, well, but it's all it makes some sort of sense that you can't wait until you need a prescription drug and then sign up. Duh.
Yeah, but the fine is ridiculously confiscatory.
Yeah, it's if you should have been paying. Let's say it's
let me give you just an example. When my father died, my parent, my dad handled this stuff when they were retired, right?
Right.
Well, when my father died, somehow my mother missed a piece of mail that came, because, she was one of those Luddites that, didn't know anything about digital anything. No computer, internet, no cell phone with a...
Sort of like me.
Yeah, I got her a cell phone so that if she fell, she wouldn't, I died because I couldn't crawl to the phone.
Did you get her a jitterbug?
Well, I got her with a flip phone.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, a jitterbug.
Okay, yeah, and it was, it ran for like a week and a half on a charge because all it did was make phone calls. But I'm like, Mom, just stuff this thing in your pocket. It works just like the phone on the wall. And, and if you, take a wipe out while you're going to the mailbox or whatever, you can call 911 and say, hey, come get me. So she did. But that was, that was the world she lived in, and that's the world she grew up in.
By the way, I've got one like that in my gym bag. In case I ever get mugged, they steal my phone, I can still call 911.
You can still call 911, yeah, because you don't have to have a service plan for it to work.
Yeah.
So the thing is, in the middle of this jumble, and of course, all the BS that goes on when somebody that you love passes, somehow she ended up off the Advantage plan that they were on for like 2 months. Okay, now she wasn't using any of it because she hadn't been to the doctor. She hadn't had anything go wrong with it, whatever. And after that period, after things kind of calmed down a bit, she's like, hey, Carl, I need some help sorting all this stuff out. I go through this and I find it and I'm like, oh my God. I said, oh no. So we get her back on there. Well, they fined her like $150 a month forever. Okay. So, that, and this, she wasn't deliberately trying to evade anything, and she didn't use any service during that period. It didn't make any difference. The law is the law. The rules are the rules. That's the way it goes. It is insanely confiscatory if you do not get on it.
I'm not saying they should have done that to your mom, but the idea of insurance.
I understand why they did it. I'm not arguing that, the theory behind it's wrong. I'm just saying that
the person that I helped, they were like 68. And had never had the prescription drug, and all of a sudden got one of these blood thinner things that are, $300 a month. And they're paying like $10 extra for the rest of their life. So instead of $50
a month.
Well,
$10 is not crazy, but
at the time, the insurance was only like $50.
Right. Well, that's a lot then. Yeah.
If you live a year, you got away with it. Right.
Right. Exactly.
if you lived 30 years, you didn't get away with it.
But this kind of cost shifting and game playing is part and parcel of the political world we live in today. And unfortunately, the in the markets, and this is what everybody needs to be aware of and prepare for, the rate backup that has occurred and is continuing to occur started on the day the Fed took 50 basis points off. All right, I mean, I'm staring at the chart as we're talking, and this should have happened back around 2010, 2011. Of course, the machinations were played, and when businesses saw this in the curve, when they saw the end of this cycle, and historically these cycles are always, you know, 3 decades long, 4 decades long. They're not 2 or 3 year things. So people who think that this is going to change back in a year or two, oh boy, is that a bad bet. And when they saw this back around that time, 11, 12, 13, you would have thought that corporations would have taken leverage down, because the inevitable change means that when you roll over debt, instead of being accretive,
they brought it back up. They
but chief,
so much
instead of being accretive to your earnings when you refinance at a lower rate, which it is, you know, I mean, if you pay 50, if you have 5% rate, $1 million out, you're paying 50 grand for interest, right? If you roll it into at 3, that's $20,000 that goes directly to your bottom line, because you're not paying that money in interest.
You know, if I was debating you, I would be like Ronald Reagan. There you go again. Remember we used to say that?
Yeah, okay, well, you know what?
What I'm saying is, you assume that the people at United Airlines and all these other places that take every friggin' nickel and buy stock back give a rat's ass about what happens 10 years from now to that company?
Well, no, they don't, but you know what you do if it's in your portfolio?
I do, yeah. But that's,
okay,
that's,
well, guess what? Buffett has seen this, and he's got a third of Berkshire in cash right now.
I know, that. Why do you think that what I tell my clients is, or would-be clients, and to be honest, the conversation sometimes goes over like a fart in church. I'll say, I'll say, you know, when you've got a stock that never pays any dividend, is never going to send you any money, the only way you're going to get your money out of it is to sell some of it along the way. Is it going up? Why would I ever sell it all? It does go up because. I'm not denigrating anybody who is a client or would be a client. It's just not. I mean, if they had the same discussion with me about taking out an appendix, I'd sound just the same way.
Well, chief, this is what those cycles do, okay? Because on the way down, you get crashes, you get bad things, right? But they always reverse because the financing continues to get cheaper.
But I mean, the psychology part here is the part I think we're not disagreeing on anything regarding the theory of this.
Oh no, it's the psychology.
But the psychology of it is Carl, what? Just like the guy in our introduction about the swearing, what the bleep are you talking about? I got 2 more years to cash in on my stock bonuses. I'm the chairman. If this thing doesn't even exist 5 years now, what do I care?
Yeah,
as long as you can make it 1 more year, 2 more years, we're not talking about people that are saying we're 20. We're going to be 2025. I really care about this company in 2075. No, they don't. A few do.
You're right, and that is the salient issue, is that.
Well, look at the lady we had on yesterday. She cares about Chicago in 2075, and they're accusing her of doing stuff she never even did. It's like, yeah. I mean, what are we doing anyway? The 44,000 that were on strike at Boeing,
right?
Somebody calls Boeing. How many people are working? Nobody. Okay, that's 44,000 less than. Does that go right into the numbers just like that?
Well, it's part of the statistical sample, so yes, it matters. Yes, it counts. The same thing with the people who got hosed by Helene. Okay, I mean, you know, that part of North Carolina was essentially offline for a month.
So we're 100,000 people there, maybe? 50.
Well, it's starting to come back online now, and the thing is the reconstruction, and, you know, and all the linemen down in Florida, that's accretive, right? Because they're working where they wouldn't be otherwise. So there is balance to this, but yes, strikes absolutely count. Natural disasters count if the recovery. The paradox is that often natural disasters actually lead to increases in the numbers because of the way the sampling works, and it's just simply because you have to fix stuff. Okay, but strikes absolutely do show up in the numbers, And so the BLS, you know, did footnote the report and said that, you know, that the strikes certainly had an impact. Sure, they did.
So now the guys that go down there that are hooking the place back up, power lines and stuff, now if they're working 12 hours a day, 12/7, where does that show up? Just shows up in hours worked or something?
Yeah, it shows up in hours worked, and obviously...
But that's a small blip countrywide, probably.
Well, hours worked in weekly checks, okay? Because, you know, a lot of that's double time, right? Or time and a half, at least. So, yeah, and then the other thing is that some of those guys are power company employees, and they're on mutual aid, so, you know, they would have been paid anyway, right? But there's a decent percentage of the people that chase those things. They're essentially wildcatters, and I know some people that do that. That's how they make their living. They work the summers chasing storms and doing roofs and, you know, stuff like this, doing construction related things, and, you know, they work 4 or 5 months out of the year and make $250,000.
I think my buddy here, that is a high wire man. There's actually a. Let me know when Kenny piles in, Ricky.
I'm here.
Okay. This guy, I don't know. Kenny's supposed to know everything. You know, it's like a 6-week course to become one of these high wire guys.
I mean, it's like
a boot camp.
It is, but boy, I'll tell you what, you earn your money doing this. Okay.
He said that there were guys there that it really had like kind of no fear the first week or two. After a couple of weeks, it gets worse, not better, for a lot of people, and they quit.
Yeah,
you think if you got up there the first day and it didn't bother you, you'd be fine. He goes, "That's not the truth, guys."
No, it's not. But Chief, those guys earn the money.
Oh, God, yeah.
Okay, I I'll tell you what. There's rumors that over in Western North Carolina they're not paying them, and some of them have gone on strike as a result of this. So, I mean, I don't know how true any of that is, but, you know, social media is so full of BS that you can't take anything.
Well, he told me maybe 3 hurricanes ago, maybe 5 years ago, that they were driving down there with their trucks, and they got the message they weren't going to pay union scale. They turned around and came back.
Yeah, I will say this. In Florida, these kinds of problems, you know, I lived there for 20 years. They don't happen.
They pay everybody.
they get the lines back up, and they get the power back on, like, right now.
All right, Carl, we'll talk at you Friday night. Are you going to go out and vote early, vote often, or what?
Well, I already voted, and I don't live in Chicago, so I can only vote once here in Tennessee.
I offered Karen, Kenny, if you heard the interview yesterday with Karen Reeves, I go, Karen, I know last time when you're running for the U.S. rep, you didn't want me to go vote. You want me to sneak down and vote, like, once in drag and once myself? No, don't do that.
by the way, just as a quick aside, you do know that when the addition states were going in just before the Civil War, that Kansas actually got a shootout as a result of non-Kansans showing up to vote in the election to determine whether they were going to be a slave state or not.
Oh, God.
So illegal voting is not a new thing.
Well, I don't know, but this isn't voting, but... it's happened on the Republican side here, I know, and probably on the Democratic side, that since Illinois is such a nothing state, we don't even get commercials.
Oh, yeah.
The Democrats and the Republican people that do help canvass have been working nonstop in Wisconsin.
Yeah, it's, well, you know, I mean, you got to go where the business is, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's, yeah.
All right, Carl, thank you. Talk at you Friday, if not sooner. Kenny, good to hear you, buddy. You sound good?
I'm good. How are you?
Are you back in Florida, or are you still in Boston?
I'm back in Florida. And the weather's a little bit overcast today, which I wonder, is that suggesting anything about what's going to happen? We'll see.
I don't know. I have my feelings, and I don't want to lob one out there, but I have a feeling how this is going to go today, and it comes from not from any of the polls. Well, the polls are all pretty tight. It comes from a lot of people have been sending me stuff regarding how many different people have been signing up to elections in different areas, and me kind of trying to, I really do think that for the people that we know and the people, you know, in our collective age groups and everything, nothing much has changed in the elections. But I think the demographics has been a really huge. I think Trump's walking into a hurricane against him demographic wise. I really do.
Yeah, well, you know, I think it's going to be tight. I do agree it's going to be tight. I don't think it's going to be a landslide in either direction. I don't think we're getting a result tonight. I think we're not going to know until later in the week, Thursday, Friday, because some of the swing sets have already told us, don't rush us. It's going to take us days to count. So, you know, they've already kind of laid that out there. I mean, unless it's a landslide tonight, I suspect we're going to be in limbo at least until the end of the week. And then I suspect that's even going to drag on because I'm sure there's going to be court cases on both sides. I don't care what you say. I think both sides are going to start to challenge something they don't like. So, you know, this could drag on for a little bit.
Well, I was looking at one of the things I read was 376,000 people. This is like a month or two ago. Had signed up in like the last, you know, who knows if these numbers are right, in the last 6 months or something, and like 85% of people that register the year of an election vote in the election. Now, how the hell you figure that out, I have no idea. And I just was looking yesterday in Wisconsin, and in the last like month, 10,000 people have signed up in the county where Madison is, the liberal county, and 12,000 have signed up in Milwaukee, which is the liberal county. And you just, you wonder if it's this, and it just as a polling thing, not saying these guys don't know their job, they sure as hell do. If I was a pollster, I'm not so sure how I get to somebody who just signed up. I'm sensing the same thing as in the Brexit. The polls were correct for the people they talked to, they just didn't talk to all the right people.
Yeah, right.
And I wonder how many of these 19, 20-year-old young ladies especially that are signing up in college, I don't think they're Trumpers. I think they think he's a creep, but I don't know. I'm not gonna make a bet on my knowledge. I'm just letting listeners know what I've seen. Now other people.
I hear you. I wonder if things like, you know, yesterday Joe Rogan came out and threw a support by Trump. I wonder what that means for young men in this country that are big Joe Rogan fans, right, and listeners and followers and all that stuff. I mean, does that stuff really matter? Is that endorsement going to cause all these, you know, these 20-year-old young men to go out and say, you know, I'm voting for Trump because Joe Rogan told me to, or Joe Rogan supports him, or whatever, you know?
Well, if they voted early, it's not going to help.
No, if they voted early, it's not going to help. I'm talking about guys that are going to vote today.
Yeah, everybody has this, you know, this ego thing about them. Somehow, Kenny, I don't know, 20 years on the floor, I have an ego in regards to, I think I can do the best job for anybody who has positions that need my help than anybody. I have that ego, but that's about it. I mean, the idea that I said something on my show, tomorrow the president did what I wanted him to do, that it was because he was listening. Believe me.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times at CNBC, using your old place, did somebody on there say, the stock's up today because Joe was on in the interview yesterday. Well, really? How much sway does Joe Rogan have? How much sway does Taylor Swift actually have? I have no idea. I mean, does anybody? I'm going to say Taylor Swift might have a little more actually, because a lot of people signed up that didn't sign up. I mean, so that, to the extent that Taylor Swift can say to people, you really need to sign up if you haven't, and the next week, you know, 50,000 young girls do, I'd have to. That doesn't mean they're going to vote her way. It just means
No, it doesn't. I think that's what they assume is going to happen, though, right?
Yeah, but I don't know if I'd believe that. You know, I mean, but the fact is, if there's a bulge, it might have been people who were planning on signing up anyway, and she just reminded them, you know, type of
thing. Yeah.
You know, I mean, you never know unless you talk to somebody, right? But everybody,
right?
You know, so what does Joe Rogan have to do with it? What do we have to do with it? What does CNBC, in our own minds, we cover the world, right? But that's in our own minds.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Anyway,
if you come on today and say you've had Nvidia for your entire life and you're the new Warren Buffett and you're selling every share today, all of a sudden the stock's down $20. Are you going to say, or am I going to say, geez, Kenny Polcari on Stocks and Jacks said he got rid of his Nvidia, it's down $20? Okay, I could say that, but is it? But is that the cause? I don't know.
Yeah, no, not at all. I think right now the market is in churn mode. I don't necessarily think. I think today is going to occupy the action. I mean, the election is going to occupy the action today. I think then, you know, it's all well and good. The Fed is coming out. They're going to cut 25 basis points. You got that confirmation in the Wall Street Journal this morning when Nikki Timrose, who's the deep throat for the Fed when they can't talk, came out and published the article saying it's 25. You know, if it were changing, if the Fed was going to change their mind, he would have written an article challenging that. He would have written an article, pushing the new idea. He didn't. He wrote the article that they need to cut 25. They're going to cut 25. So I think that's all baked in. I think what's going to be interesting is what they now say about Friday's INFP report. Is the labor market really weakening? Is it a one-off? Is it an outlier? Is he really concerned about it? And because that's going to set him up for the December conversation and then early into next year. I think it's a mistake. You know me. I don't think they should cut. I think they were very aggressive in September. I think they can afford to sit this one out and just do nothing, but I don't think they're going to. I think the bond market is, the bond yields have done nothing but shoot higher ever since they cut rates by 50 basis points. So I think the bond market is telling you something different, right? I think the bond market's much more concerned about inflation rearing its ugly head again, although Jay Powell seems to be much more concerned about the cooling labor market than he is about inflation. And I think that's because they're going to have to accept the fact that inflation is going to rear its ugly head, and they're going to hopefully... I think the 2% target's going to become 4% because I think you have to inflate your way out of this mess that we're in, right? And so I think they're going to have to accept the fact that inflation is going to remain higher. I think that's what the bond market's telling us.
I think maybe for the first time, Kenny, if I live another 25 years, one of these days, I might want to, if you guys are all still with me, we need to write a book on the history of this era. Because I think the more I think about it, I could never understand why when the inflation was obviously rearing its ugly head that was right there in front of us, for God's sake. We had 10 and 30 year rates of 1.5% and 2%. And
right.
But never in our lifetime or never anywhere that I've even read about other economies was a central bank essentially, if you and I said, boy, these bonds really need to go down and we shorted them, we got it stuck right where the sun don't shine because the Fed came in and bought them and they're bigger than we are. The 2 and 3 and 4 trillion dollar addition to the balance sheet, which essentially negated, there was no market, right? And now they're not doing that. And they're putting inflation back in the system by pouring some money in and by lowering these rates. But now the inflation is being reflected gingerly, I might add, because people are still worried that they're going to come in and buy them up right out of your behind. Gingerly, I might add, these rates are creeping up. But I'll tell you what, I look at where I think this inflation in the last few months, now whether they're going to stop it or not, I don't know. Money supply is growing at a 5.5% annual rate. Now, to me, that means our inflation rate is going to be 4 or 4.5 ongoing if they keep doing that.
Right.
And if it's 4, 4.5, and you actually get some money for loaning people dough, which you should, that equates to about a 6.5, 6.75 10-year rate to me.
Right.
Now, the question is, why isn't it there? Because people are still afraid they're going to get stuck up to behind by these guys buying it from them, right?
I don't think they're going to be able to control that. I do think that inflation is going to be retarded, and I do think that that's where the 10-year is going. I think it's absolutely going to better than 5%. Somewhere between 5 and 6 is probably where I think it's going. And then I think that will pose some headwinds for stocks. I think it won't be so easy. You just can't arbitrarily buy the market. I think you have to be much more specific in terms of names that you own. But I think that's what we have to wait and see, because I think it is going to happen, come this new year. And look, they've said it. The CBO has come out and said it. Goldman Sachs has come out with a report and said either side, it's coming back no matter who wins. So let's not blame one side or the other. It's coming back no matter who wins. It just depends on the extent to which it comes back, right? The speed at which it happens.
Well, Kenny, my thoughts on a lot of this have to do with, to be honest, I've got a lot of this from Carl, believe it or not. But no, I love Carl. But I'm starting to look at stuff and I have discussions with people. Matter of fact, people very close to me.
Yeah.
I'm trying to look long term on stuff. And if you look at, these long term numbers, long term deficits and stuff, other than the fact that we have two dramatically different people running for this office. Last time I checked, the calculator works the same for whoever's using it, right?
100%.
No matter what, Trump's going to get in there, maybe, and he's going to sit his behind down in the Oval Office, and somebody's going to say, hey, Donald, of course, he'll fire the guy if he says it to him. Donald, it's this tariff idea, You're not even on the same planet compared to how much we get in income taxes. But here's what we get on both. That's not going to work. And oh, by the way, we're in total hack, so you might not want to lower taxes. Now, on the other hand, if she gets in there and she puts her behind down in the chair, they're going to say, Kamala, Miss President Kamala, by the way, we got no dough. You're not going to send everybody who wants to buy a house $50,000. I hope these people both at least know that.
Well, you're assuming that we're going to get a split Congress. If you get a sweep either way, so say she wins, say it's a Democratic sweep, I think you have to watch out because it'll be uncontrolled. They'll just do what they want. Now, the other side will do the same thing.
I think it's an
uncontrolled Republican win.
Except the only thing, Kenny, is that I think there are people on either side of the aisle. First of all, I don't think think back, not even in our lifetimes, the last 25 years, every time somebody's had a combined Congress where the president had the Congress, both of them, they didn't do squat. There was more fighting within their party than there was with the other side, for God's sake.
Well, I think that's more true on the Republican side. I think the Democrats fall right in line.
Well, the only thing that they were able to get through that they probably shouldn't have, and they should have done a way better job, was Obamacare. Other than that, what did Obama do when he had the people together?
Yeah. No, I hear you. I'm just nervous this time.
I'm incredibly nervous. I can't believe some of the stuff that I get from the Quora stuff people write in from people in Europe. They go, I can't believe this clown show in the country that is the most important country in the world.
The clown show. I hate to say it. That's exactly what it is, a clown show.
And, I was listening to John Kennedy's debate with Nixon. And he goes, if we go down, freedom goes down with us. That's how important we are.
Right.
I mean, don't we get that?
Yeah, well, we should. I don't think there are some people that do, but...
Well, I mean, even this, the whole thing with the... I am not... Same thing with this, the immigrants. Okay, I'm not... I don't want people swimming across the river, Kenny. Everybody knows that. I want people to get here, if they get here in a reasonable manner with a... Just like people used to do Ellis Island, you got physically checked out.
Agreed, 100%. I get no problem with that.
And yet, the idea that what has struck up among the people that listen to Trump, the murders these people are creating. Kenny, I live in Chicago.
Yeah.
Since these people have been here, out of the last 500 murders in Chicago, I don't think one of them was done by one of these people.
Speaking of Chicago, let me ask a question. Are they preparing for tonight? Are they boarding up buildings and doing all that shit? I saw that.
Illinois is a nothing state. I haven't even seen a commercial from the presidency.
It's not a matter of seeing a commercial. It's just a matter of if they project he's going to win. Are you at all worried that there's going to be civil unrest?
Well, no. Actually, not at all. I mean, I'm surprised. We don't care about stuff like that.
Well, I got to tell you, I was in New York last week. You can almost feel the tension; like it feels like it's ready to explode. And so I have to go back up to New York tomorrow.
Well, Kenny, the dude has threatened a lot of people. She hasn't.
I hear you.
Yeah,
I hear you. So let's just see what happens, but. I have to go back to New York tomorrow because I have that big Headstrong Gala event that we do every year, you know, the veterans event.
Yep.
That's actually Thursday night at Cipriani's down on Wall Street. And so I have to be up there. I'm going up tomorrow afternoon. And I got to tell you, I was there last week. You could almost feel the thickness in the air over this election, like the tension in the air. And so I am a little bit concerned that New York City, if it goes his way, I think New York City there could be.
What if it goes the other way in some of these other areas?
Well, I hear you, but I think if it goes the other way, New York City will be celebrating. I don't think they'll be tearing the place down. I think they will be. There's a potential for some people to tear the place down if he wins in New York City. I'm just saying New York City. I really do. I hate to say it because I love the city. I think all that, but you can feel the tension in the air.
You do realize that we, as predictors and stocks and jacks, we're pretty good. I don't know if you remember this. I don't remember the date. Maybe Ricky does. You and I made the prediction that this entire campaign, not one of the issues that you and I cared about would be debated, and I think we were correct.
Yeah, yeah.
What are we going to do with this I mean, this how they're trying to do it, and how the other side is whatever it is. I mean, if you say, you know, we should have good beer in this country, the other side's going to argue against you, right? I mean, it's we've gotten to that stage here.
Yeah.
How we can't figure out a way to do something with the student loan thing that's fair to everybody and realize that what a disaster it all was. I mean, I don't care what you do. We cut the interest rates down, going back in retrospect. Somebody paid their stuff. Some way, 10 rational people should be able to get in a room. The amount of young people that this is overwhelming to them. With the and nobody would have cared, I think, if somebody had a student loan 15, 20 years ago, if the price of houses were still 2.25, but it's not.
Right.
I mean, all this stuff we've done to people collectively is piling on. That's why people are so pissed. You can't just say, well, inflation's a problem. Well, yeah, inflation's a problem because now if somebody already was in debt, now this already happened. It's like what's the next straw today? And I don't think these politicians have any clue that what's banging on people from all sides. I really don't. Or they don't care. I mean, one or the other. I mean, she, I think, is closer to the regular person than he is. And that doesn't make her better. But, I mean, I think she's a little younger. And, you know, he's never been close to a regular person, I don't think. But I don't know if she ever has either. But at least, I'm saying, somehow or another, the problems that you and I are seeing, I mean, if I don't have grandkids, but if I did, I'd look at them and go, I don't know if they're ever going to afford a new car or a new house. That's not right. That's not right. What about education? I have to pay, put away $300,000 for my grandkid to go to Notre Dame when it cost me 12?
Listen, $300,000, you're probably that's on the low end.
I'm saying the kid's already a teenager. he's already almost there. What are these problems? I almost don't care who lands in the Oval Office if it's Solomon. The list of crap the guy's got to do, or he or she's got to do on day one, is going, what do I want this job for?
Yeah, no, I hear you.
Next week will we know? I think we'll know next week. Carl's convinced these states have got
it. I hope we're going to know next week. God, if we don't know next week, it'll be really ugly. But I hope we know by next.
Carl's
week.
Convinced.
I hope we know by Thursday or Friday.
He thinks these states have buttoned up the protocol to such a huge extent that it's so much harder to cheat than 4 years ago that we might have somebody tonight. I hope he's right.
Okay. I mean, I hope so. I'd rather see it over tonight. I just don't think it's going to be.
We'll know if the pollsters. I did. I don't know if I mentioned last week the part about the polls. And actually, I was using your name in vain, not in vain, but the you were saying that the gambling group favored Trump.
Yeah.
So I dug out some. I haven't talked to you in a week. I dug out all these old articles about the Brexit.
Yeah.
I didn't tell you this. And they had one guy who ran a gambling place, and he goes, "Well, he says." I don't make the odds. I'm just the bookie. he goes, the polls were wrong, so people bet the polls, so they were wrong.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. He goes, I don't do it.
The polls, the betting markets had him way out in front for a long time. Now the betting markets have it almost even, you know, which is very interesting to me because I'm curious what happened between last week when he was way out in front to suddenly yesterday where the betting markets have now have it an even race.
Well, the polls went like even Steven in virtually every race.
Yeah, the polls have been, but you have to be careful because you never know. The pollsters, they call up, you know, they're in a Democratic state, they call up all Democrats and they get a tilted they get a tilted result, right? So I never really, I have trouble putting my weight behind polls because I don't know who the sample was. Where did they go? Who did they call? How many did they call? Did they really call 50-50, you know, Republicans and Democrats, or did they favor one side over the other? So I have trouble with polls and believing polls, but let's see.
Well, I think one of the reasons why we don't believe them is because I've got a little bit of statistics. I'm sure you have too. I don't know how you'd even design one in today's world.
Right, exactly.
Anyway,
yeah, exactly.
Kenny, we'll let you go. I'll talk at you next week, and hopefully everything will be smooth as silk and copacetic. What are the chances of that?
All right, Dave, I'll talk to you.
S&P Futures up 9, NASDAQ Futures up 62. Do you want to go right to Hal? Is he with us?
Hey, morning.
How are you, bud? Let's go right to Hal, and we'll have a break at 7:30 and go through all the other stuff going on in the world.
The kids are all off, and both Lynn and I voted already, so we're good to go here.
I'm going this afternoon. There's never anybody usually at my place. God, I hope they never close it. I got to wait in line with everybody else on the weekends. But
well, Chicago and Illinois is kind of like voting in Idaho. Does your vote really matter?
Because I'm going to say that today, get a load of this. The we have all the city stuff and the mayor and all that stuff was last year or 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So there's none of that stuff.
I have a question for you, Tom. Why is the mayor a race or the governor's race in a lot of states and cities or whatever? Why is it always the year after the presidential races? Because it has something to do with they know the voter turnout's going to be really, really low.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, okay.
Why would you want
it? You
want it in February of an off year.
Yeah.
And if it's 5 below 0, you're happy as a clam.
Because you want it.
Yeah.
You want it on Super Bowl Sunday.
You want to let the county workers off for the day so they can go vote. You want to make it as easy as possible for the people that vote for you to get there, and make it as miserable as possible for everybody else.
Yeah.
I mean, duh. I
revoke the question. All right.
And I'm not a gun guy, but the next time I hear a politician say that it's not important who you vote for, it's important that you vote, I want a water balloon. Can I hit him with a water balloon without causing too much trouble? Because you know damn
no,
well,
can't.
If you're not going to vote for him, he wants you nowhere near the poll. I mean, come on, we're old enough to realize this. You know, but no, you asked, so I will say, today we have the president, I think we have the state's attorney. Now, that spot, it's like an Illinois spot, right? The governor's not on. None of those people are on. We don't have a senator running. So you've got my congressman in my district, who I think is either unopposed or damn near unopposed, Mike Quigley. So that's no vote there. And we probably have a judicial retention ballot. Why that's on today, I don't know. And there's probably... what I understand from people who have already been there is probably 30 to 40 individual election spots for judges, which is even more bizarre. I was having a couple of adult beverages with my judge buddies last Wednesday night, and one of the guys, I said to him, Peter, I didn't even know his last name. I said, Peter, what's your last name? So I make sure you're not one of the guys I vote no for. and he goes, don't worry, I'm retiring. I'm not on there. I'm out like next summer, so they don't vote to retain me. I said, well, how the hell does that work? He said, well, when you see in there, it'll be from the Garcia vacancy. You know, there'll be somebody to vote for, Hal Snar or somebody. Well, then it becomes, say you get in there, and you're a judge for 10 years, and you need to retire or croak or something. Then it'll become the Snar vacancy of your spot, and then we're voting for somebody to take your place. So it's never your spot. It's always the guy before you spot kind of thing until you die or retire.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird? So you'd be running for the Ricardo Garcia vacancy. And somebody will go, not only do we not know who the hell, we know who Ricky is, but not only do we not know who the hell Ricardo Garcia was and if he did a good job or not, we have no idea who the hell is Hal Snar. But that's the vote. And usually there's one name there, and it might be two, but usually there's one running for
what would make this whole process a lot easier is if they had like some kind of service. And I don't know if you could do it.
Well, you got all the law firms and you got the newspapers and everybody, but it's nobody wants to pay attention to them.
Yeah, I think the next time I vote, this year was marred by the fact that we had to move down to North Carolina so quickly, and we're trying to buy a house. And I, they told me to turn my phone off, and I just told them that I'm using my phone to, research my ballot, or I have research on my phone. And while I was in the polling location, honestly, I pulled up Google names of people. I don't even know who these people were, right? So I'm Googling their names, and I think I voted for the people who are most likely to be open to libertarian ideas. That's who I generally voted for. Because I didn't really know anybody at all except for, the president and the vice president. That's the only people I knew, because we were here. We got here in August. We all moved down here in August, and the kids went to school. I'm building out this health economics class. And, man, I just didn't have the time to do the research this year. So I was doing it on the fly while I was filling out my ballot. normally I fill out a little dossier, right? I kind of have an idea of what I'm going to vote for and who I'm not going to vote for and what election, races I'm going to vote none of the above for, right? Where I'm not going to mark anybody. But this year I couldn't do it. Just not enough time.
Well, let me ask, in terms of theory, we used to have, I think way back in the day, we had appointed judges, right?
Yeah. Well, I think it just depends on the state. In some states, they vote for their justices.
Well, I'm saying, I think everybody appoints
these
people.
We're not appointed, yeah.
Everybody appoints these people. And then everybody says, well, that's no good. All right, we don't want to do that. We don't want just the mayor appointing whoever the hell, wouldn't be the mayor probably, it'd be somebody. I don't know who even appoints him, but whoever did appoint him, I don't know, the Cook County Board, or whatever, have any idea. But so, okay, well, that's a horrible idea. Let's not do that. We're gonna have them elected. And then we say, okay. But now nobody knows who the hell they're voting for. So those people are going to go to the Bar Association or go someplace. And then there's going to be some sort of a political group that says, okay, these are the people that we're going to put up for election. Okay, because then they're going to be nominated by the Democratic Party, Republican Party. So you have all this backseated stuff. Now who the hell do they owe here? Now instead of owing the person who appointed them, now they owe the person who gave them the okay to get on the ballot. All right, they got the signatures and whatever else for them. So, I mean, you just go piggy move up or piggy move down the line, and you get to the same place. I mean, who are they beholding to? I mean, some of the appellate judges, now they're elected, they're six figures things to get them in there. I mean, who's coming up with the money? What do they expect? I mean, you know, it's really hard. And then you get this all this mess, and today, by the time I'm done with this, I'm probably going to say, why the hell did we disappoint him? I mean, I guess I don't know the answer. Because either way, the amount of information, again, I say this all the time, as they say in a trading floor, you can't take a drink out of a fire hydrant, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's coming at you too quick. And what if I did spend my last 3 weeks alone somewhere going through all this stuff on all these judges? I'm the only one of how many?
Yeah, you're probably the only one doing it, yeah.
You know, I actually read once on the retention ballot that this is, for those who don't know what that means, they'll say for the, Judge Hal Snar, yes or no. Okay? And, most people, I think most people in this day and age, I guess I'll tell you my Eric May story, but most people in this day and age, in any day and age, if they don't know somebody at all, and you say, gee, is Ricky a good guy? You're probably going to say, probably, because you've run into more good guys in your life than bad guys,
yeah.
I hope.
Yeah.
So people aren't necessarily all that negative. Now, so the retention ballots, left to, without any good or bad, the person has never had his name in a paper, nothing. I think I read retention ballots, people got between 80 and 85% yes.
Yeah.
If somebody did something untoward...
It kind of sounds like a Cuban election, right?
Yeah, well, but if somebody did something untoward where there was a Tribune editorial that said, this Ricky Garcia guy, he shows up 3 days a week, it's a mess because he's never there, God knows if he's fishing or what the hell he's doing, and they really lambaste him, generally, he still gets 55 or 60%.
Yeah.
Yes. Because how many people read that stuff and actually care? So there was only one guy, I think, that got thrown out, and he somehow sued, and he got back in. That's what was so weird about my friend Judge Tooman, everybody's friend Judge Tooman, who died last year, and he was 80-something and still, he just retired. But he was the head of the juvenile division, probably the straightest, most respected judge in the last 40 years here. So whenever there was this, something really difficult to deal with, they would appoint him as the special judge. So he was appointed. Remember the Jesse Smollett fiasco? Where the state's attorney let all the charges go, but they had a history together or something bizarre like that. Well,
yeah.
they appointed Tooman to do the special investigation. And he said, yeah, this is pretty much bleeped up. She didn't do her job. And they appointed Dan Webb to do a special investigation, and they came back, they indicted him again. Well, Tony Preckwinkle, who's the head of Cook County Board, that was not the decision she wanted, because Kim Fox is her girl. So she is all over Tooman, and actually runs this thing in the paper that they should get rid of Tooman at age 82 on their, on the retention bill. Now, this is the guy who put, was it Jeff Fort in jail years and years ago? He was the only judge that would take that case.
Wow.
And they had machine guns out in front of the courthouse because they thought the place was going to be attacked and all this kind of stuff. Tooman refused to have anybody. He had, like, he said, you can have one squad car in front of my house. That's it. Otherwise, I'm bothering my neighbors. Tough little dude, boy. Marine.
Tough guy.
Huh? You know, so then she wants him out because he came up with the wrong decision in the Smollett case. I mean, you never get anybody out through the retention bill because most people, now when you go from that, and then you get to some knucklehead like me, or Dr. J's wife, Bridget McGrath, was a judge, and I said, okay, Bridget, who should I vote no for? And she gives me like eight names. She goes, these people don't even show up. I mean, people are constantly covering for them. I mean, I don't know what they're doing, but they don't even, you know. they're off 25 days a year. We can't handle that, or 30.
Looking at a paycheck without doing anything.
Yeah, huh? Yeah. And she says, and I said, so what is the chief judge? He goes, the chief judge is happy because that way he doesn't have to give them a case because they're lousy when they get a case. So anyway, I got like,
hey, then you got a good, good legal system, yeah, there, right?
So I go, okay. So what do, dummy that I am? I leave the list of five judges on my dining room table when I walk down the block, and I go, okay, well, how about if I just vote no for all of them? Right? So I vote no for everybody, which is a procedure. There's like 100 of them in there. So then I go to the local bar, sit down. There's nobody in the place. And I, you know, grab an adult beverage, sitting there going, well, how big of an ass was I to just vote no for all these people? So in the door comes this huge black guy, good-looking guy, comes and he sits down right next to me in like this entire open bar. And I go, that's kind of odd. But I mean, it wasn't like he was on my lap or anything. But and so, of course, we start talking. I go, hey, how are you? My name's Tom, blah, blah, blah. And his name's Eric. And he goes, by the way, where are you coming from? I said, well, I'm just coming from the polling place. And I have to admit, I just voted no for all the judges. He clinks my glass and he goes, so did I. So became a terrific 15-year friendship. How's that for a start of a? He goes, so did I. I think they're all no good too. I go, okay then. So that, I mean, but I, you know, but like I said, it's so rare to ever boot anybody. But what a waste of time. I'm going to say that, like I said, the elections that I think I have, there's like five or six. The rest of them are all judges. So,
yeah.
And in Illinois, there's no real reason to vote on the president's side, which is so weird because how many people on the Democratic side are saying, I don't know, my vote doesn't even count, we're going to win anyway. And how many people on the Republicans, we never actually get a true count of,
yeah,
of not the people, some people don't care. We never actually get a true vote on the popular side.
Well, I think in a state like that, with like Idaho, I think the people who want to, I think a lot of voters want to be on the winning team. And so if you perceive your candidate as the winning candidate, I think you're probably more likely to vote than a person who is voting for the person that has no chance of winning the state. And, you know, their arguments to get rid of the Electoral College, I don't think you get rid of the Electoral College during the middle of an election season.
No.
I think if you want to get rid of the Electoral College, you do it, you know, maybe 10 years before the law's put in place, you know. And if you do get rid of the Electoral College, that changes the game. Now, Republicans have, you know, no choice but to start campaigning in places they never campaigned before. The Democrats will probably just continue to campaign. Well, they're going to campaign in places they didn't need to campaign before, like California, Florida, Illinois, right? New Jersey.
Well, I mean, when you say get rid of it, I would.
I'm not saying I agree with getting rid of it.
No, no, no.
If they've decided to get rid of it, that just means these candidates now have to go to places where the population is. It's really hard to say right now that because the popular vote generally goes to the Democrat, that the Democrats would always win elections. I think that's inaccurate to say because neither of these candidates are really going to California, New York, or Illinois. Neither of them are. Right? They don't have to.
All right, I would this is just thinking that going to a popular boat, maybe it's too quick, too soon, 200 and some years. I would go halfway. I would go to the Nebraska model.
But the problem with the Nebraska model is if you want kind of the problem with the way they decide how many electoral college votes each state gets, it's kind of skewed toward the small states, not from a small state.
Yeah, I mean,
because
that's
of the Senate, right?
that's a bigger.
Yeah.
Let me explain for what the Nebraska model is if you have five representatives. I'm not so sure what they do about this with the senators, but if you have five representatives, your electoral college vote goes with each one of those spots. So in Illinois,
the popular vote in those districts, right?
Yeah, but so it's like a halfway measure. But in Illinois, there are all kinds of areas that are absolutely blue. I mean, red.
You get outside of Illinois, it's pretty much all red, right?
Well, downstate. So those people essentially don't have a vote.
Yeah.
And, that's not right, I don't think. I mean,
The states used to have, like, an electoral college type system. They went from, like, I think they went from, like, counties to, like, by population. They split it up by population. And it skewed all the weight toward the cities.
Well, the congressional districts, no matter where, are supposed to be by population.
Yeah. But I think initially, maybe 100 years ago, I was reading about this a few years ago, and at the state level, it was more kind of like an electoral college model where it was like, you know, by county instead of by areas where the populations were. And it really skewed the power toward the cities. And that's why you have – and I was reading about this because – there's, you know, movements within states to segregate themselves, you know, the rural counties to secede from the population centers. Like in California, the northern counties want to secede and maybe join Idaho or Oregon.
Well, if you set the states up today, you wouldn't set them up the way they are.
Yeah, you wouldn't. No, huh? No.
But I mean, here.
Like in Oregon and in Washington. There are movements within the counties of Oregon and Washington to join Idaho and call the resulting state Greater Idaho, because Portland basically runs the entire state of Oregon, and Portland is so unlike Eastern Oregon. It's just the complete polar opposite. And the same thing is going on in Washington, where Olympian.
If you're one guy living in the middle of nowhere, you are just that, one guy living in the middle of nowhere. Right?
Yeah, so the people in these rural counties in Idaho and Oregon feel like, you know, they have zero representation. Nobody cares about their rights or their issues, right? So there's this movement, and as a libertarian, I say if you don't like your government, divorce it. If a county doesn't like Oregon's government, they should be allowed to divorce.
But now you're wandering into another actually. Hot topic of mine. It's how do you pick the districts? Now, if you did it by representative districts,
how do you pick the states?
Let's start with something simple. We have the states. Now we have the districts. Now my area is known as the Triangle District. Okay, my state representative and my state the state of Illinois has state Senate districts. Okay, and I forget how many there are. Say there's 25 of them or something like that. It's probably more than that. Say there's 30 of them. I should know the number. Ricky, why don't you look it up, please? How many state Senate districts are there in Illinois? Now, those are the senators that go for the states, correct? But now the representative districts are exactly the Senate districts divided in half. I don't know if that's the way it is in other states or not. But so if you're in the the fifth Senate district, you're in like the 11th and 12th. Or the 9th and 10th representative district.
Illinois has 59 legislative districts and 118 representative districts.
Yeah, it's exactly double. It's exactly double. So, but my district, get all this, I'm in this Lincoln Park, so it's reasonably affluent, okay? It's not, I mean, it's predominantly white, but not totally. I mean, there's a lot, like I said, Eric did live two doors down from me. It's not totally white. It's people have some scratch, or there's a lot of people that live in a lot of the homes that go to school at DePaul. So you got some students in there as well. But if you look at the district, out of this little finger that they lob into, I will say, my area and in the area around me, is one little finger of a district that goes all the way to the west side, which includes like Humboldt Park, for God's sake. So like 80% of the people are basically in the hood.
Yes.
And then there's us. So, I mean, I'm never going to meet any one of these people. Our vote is absolutely useless for that. I mean, they're never going to campaign anywhere near me. We're the 10 or 15% that we just happen to tag along with, right? Yeah. So you can, even the district that Karen Reeves ran for, Bobby Rush's district, starts like downtown in the city or like on 22nd Street, grabs a big chunk of mostly African-American community on the south side, skirts Hyde Park, and heads out into the south suburbs. You know, we're talking Rodeo area.
Yeah.
You know, so Karen was out. She was campaigning at rodeos, for God's sake. And she's this African-American lady from the city. I'll say this. She's fearless. You know, I said, hey, how'd you do out there? She goes, I did fine. I'm a mother. They're mothers out there. Mothers get along. We don't care what color we are. I mean, right? She goes, they have the same problems I do. Yeah. And she has no problem going in. But now, but how you gerrymandered that district, you could do it so 60% of it is in the predominantly Democratic area, which, you know, I don't know if all black areas are, or you could put it so that, you know, 60% of it is on the other side of I-80, which is basically all rural. You could do it one way or the other. Now, that's why people are always fighting over this stuff, right?
Well, I think one way to solve that kind of issue is institute a polygon rule. A polygon is a shape where it doesn't curve in to its center. Right, it, you know, a rectangle doesn't curve in toward its center. An octagon doesn't curve into a circle. So I think maybe an issue like a polygon rule, and you know, maybe a height width proportion. That way you get less of this. You know, Democrats hate it when Republicans gerrymander, and Democrats. Republicans hate it when Democrats gerrymander. Yeah, right.
You're saying about let's wing a pebble randomly into Illinois, and pick a. Let's say an octagon around it, which gets you 100,000 people.
Knockdown, square, triangle, whatever.
Well, but the only problem with octagon is they don't match up. A square would match up, right? Let's start with a square. Let's get 100,000 people. Then go to the next side. Let's get 100,000 people. And no, I guarantee you, universally, nobody wants that because they have no influence. That's a part of it.
I don't know how you do it though. I mean, because Democrats accuse Republicans. Voter suppression when Republicans gerrymander, and the opposite true on the other side, right?
There's no question. Yeah, I mean, you know, this is the funny part of this.
I think it's one of the flaws of the Constitution that and not setting a limit on the number of Supreme Court justices. Because honestly, if you get a certain kind of candidate in there with you know, large majorities in the House and in the Senate, you could. There's nothing preventing a presidential candidate from nominating 11 justices to make it 20. There's nothing that limits.
The Congress would have to approve that. It'd be an amendment.
No, the limit.
It wouldn't be an amendment. It would have to be Congress.
The Senate would have to just confirm them. That's it.
Okay.
Because there's no. It doesn't say there are 9 justices on the Supreme Court in the Constitution. There's no limit. There's no number. That number is just purely out of tradition. So if Trump wins. He could not. I mean, he's not going to do it because he has a 6-3 majority. But if he was down 3-6, he could theoretically.
I would bet you need more than 50. And it's not a simple 50-50 in the Senate. I don't think. I don't know the answer to that. Well, maybe I'll ask Lou tomorrow or on Thursday. Hey,
well, you'd have to overcome the filibuster, and you could just have a vote.
Since we didn't go to break earlier, we've got to go to break. Everybody, what's going on? But I have a thing about. How you pick voters and this, that, and the other thing. And at least one thing about being a trader, you know, I'm used to looking in the mirror and say, you big dummy, you were short for 3 days, the market went straight up, you better get this act together. It's surprising to me how people who want to do all this vote stuff will never admit to you, I just want my vote count for more than somebody else. I don't think that's actually that unnatural, but just admit it to yourself. If you start lying to yourself, you're lying to everybody.
Rich people, they do it all the time. They got this money.
I'm gonna say if I pull up to the polling place, I have walked down there, and I see some bus get out, and I'm handing, you know, I'll use a character from the end, they're handing chickens to everybody going to vote one way, I'm going to sit there and go, wait. I think my vote should count a little more than they don't even know what they're voting for. Or,
well, you know, it's worse. It's been worse in the past. Just watch games.
Yeah, oh, yeah. But I'm saying, but if you're a Republican guy that finds a place to a way to close a vote, a precinct, an area where nobody has a car, because you think those people, I mean, it, just admit it. I think that my vote should count more than somebody else's. Okay, I may disagree with you, but don't give me this whole story about they all should be equal and then tell me different ways they can't be equal. I mean, at least, right? I mean, admit it. I mean, you know, the people who get the call from the Fed and what they're going to do before people like me, at least admit you wouldn't be as good a trader if you didn't get the call, right?
Yeah.
Duh.
Or you're getting that insider information for your from your spouse in Congress.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. SP Futures up 12, NASDAQ Futures up 73. We'll go to a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 12, NASDAQ Futures up 73, Dow Futures up 28. It's the individual stocks. I got Boeing up 279 as they have solved their strike problems. They still got all kinds of other problems, but at least they got that one off the chart. Microsoft up 92%, 92 cents. I guess a 38% pay raise over, I'm thinking, three, four years. So it's, I don't know when they last got a pay raise, so it's hard to judge as whether it's too much, too little. And by the way, it's not to me to judge, but they haven't gotten one in a couple of years. And that's for 4 years, I'd say it's probably a little light. But if it's, you know, if they got one last year and it's for 2 years, then maybe it's more than light. Who knows? I mean, time will tell on that. As we go over to Europe, the DAX up 42.2%, the FTSE down 8. Call that flat. The CAC round up 12. Call that pretty flat. So European markets tread water as traders focus on U.S. election day. Hugo Boss fell 6%. I don't remember trader Hugo Boss. We're in Asia. Nikkei, now they were closed yesterday, up 421. It's 1.1%. Hang Seng up 439, 2%. 21,000 they're over. These guys are languishing around 17,000 before China started pouring money into the system. Shanghai up 76, 2.3%. Asia Pacific markets trade mixed. They're not mixed. They all look like they're up now. Who do they think is winning? I don't know. I don't know that they. Well, I have no idea if they would cheer a Trump win or Trump lose. I mean, I don't know. We have to ask Hal about that. Yesterday, Dow was down 257, S&P down 16, NASDAQ down 59. So we're kind of making that back here. Almost exactly, actually. Bonds up 2 basis points, 4.33. The bond up 4 basis points, 2.42. Japan down 1.93. Oil, which had a rally yesterday, is moving up again today, up 54 cents to 72.01. So a little more of the high middle of the range. Brent up 51 cents, 75.59. Natural gas up 2 cents, 2.80. RBOB up 2 cents, back over $2, 2.04. We have gold up 440, right at 27.50. Silver up 27 cents, 32.88. Copper up 5 cents. Big move on copper, 1.3%. That's 4.449 on copper. Foreign exchange, euro is 109, right where it was. British pound, kind of right where it was too, at 101.298. Maybe the dollar's down a little bit, but not very much. Crypto up $1,200. Bitcoin, 68,749. Ricky, what do you got for us? Quick traffic, weather, sports. It's still kind of murky out, eh?
Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:38 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. 64 degrees right now with a high of 67. Very windy and warm with periods of rain. So prepare for wet weather if you're headed out to vote. Tonight, same thing. Windy with a shower in spots with a low of 47 degrees. Sunny down in Phoenix, Arizona, 46 degrees right now with a high of 73. Mostly sunny and cool. Dry weather. And tonight will be mainly clear and cool with a low of 50 degrees. On the traffic in Chicago, we're looking at 43 minutes. minutes inbound Kennedy from Monroe's, 58 minutes inbound Edens from Lane Cook, inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 39 minutes, inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 19 minutes, and Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 40 minutes. Lastly, sports, NFL Week 10 is here. Thursday, November 7, we have the Bengals at Ravens, 7:15 p.m. Sunday, November 10, we have the Patriots at Bears, at 12 p.m., and the Jets at Cardinals, 3:25 p.m. The NBA yesterday, the Bulls lost to Utah Jazz, 126-135, but the Suns beat the 76ers, 118-116. There are no games today due to election. Lastly, the NHL, yesterday the Kings beat the Predators, 3-0, and the Devils beat the Oilers, 3-0, once again. Back over to you, Chief.
The Bears, they actually got a couple of guys hurt. A couple of good guys are hurt. So, Hal, just you wonder what kind of glasses people wear. I was having a kind of a debate. I just watch these guys. I'm not that big into it. I don't have tickets or anything. But I still have some of my crazy friends thinking the Bears are going to be like 9-8 this year. I got them winning maybe one more game.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I'm a gambler or anything like this, but who do they see them beating? They're terrible.
Yeah. Their division's really good too, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, they haven't played a division opponent yet.
Yeah.
So they have to play Detroit, Minnesota, and Green Bay twice.
What I find interesting is Tampa Bay. They played Kansas City really well last night.
Yeah.
They've already played Atlanta twice.
Yeah. It's crazy.
The divisional contest supposed to be like later in the season?
Well, usually they're kind of interspersed through. I mean, you've got...
Yeah, at least have one of those divisional games left at the end of the season, because those are the rivalry games, right? You want those rivalry games near the end of the season because they might decide the division itself. I don't understand why they had both of those in the first half of the season. That's kind of weird.
Well, they did not have any of them yet. It's kind of weird, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the Bears have the Patriots on Sunday, whom they might be able to beat. Of course, they've got their best offense and best defensive linemen both kind of out. So it's
I think the Bears division is probably the most compelling in terms of like tradition. It's just like that. Those are the kinds of games you want to watch, whether they're good or bad.
The black and blue division.
Yeah, it's still a fun division to watch, and it's really fun to watch Detroit this year. I love the Goff story because. You know, he was left for dead at L.A., right?
And
nobody wanted him. And Lions got a really good deal for him. And here he is balling out. I mean, I just love the guy. And I also like Minnesota's quarterback from USC. I mean, he was basically left dead for
right.
He was
left for dead, too.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he was left for dead.
That's not Stanford, is it?
Oh, he was USC.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, he was USC.
Ricky, he's going brain dead. Ricky, find out who Minnesota's quarterback is. I know I shouldn't know who that is, but plus
I'm thinking Sam Bradford, but it's not Sam Bradford.
No,
I'm a big fan of his too. I was a big fan of his at USC, and I thought it was a mistake for ESPN to talk him out of college. He should have stayed a senior year, right?
Well, as a quarterback, you can't throw on your ass basically. So you got to have some protection.
Yeah.
And if you can get, I know I say this every day. If you have an offensive line that lets you with four people in the pattern once in a while, you're all of a sudden you've got a whole different program than if you have three people in the pattern, right?
Yeah.
So it's I think Kevin probably helped us out here on this quarterback. Sam Darnold. But we've all
I was thinking
sudden,
Sam Bradford. Yeah.
All of a sudden you get these people around you, baseball is not the same thing. But even in baseball, if you're not a singular talent, if you're not Ernie Banks, if you're not, somebody, obviously there's many guys better than Ernie Banks, you don't hit 320 on a team with nobody you can hit because they can pitch right around you. So the idea is to be, that's why when you get a guy who has a really good year on a really good team, he's never worth as much to the crummy team that buys him off the good team as they think he is.
Yeah.
And that's why.
It's like the Lakers and the Celtics, all those role players.
Yeah.
They would go to another team and they weren't not that good, right?
Well, yeah. It comes to the people around you. I mean, Ryan Sandberg is obviously a Hall of Famer, great ball player. Look at his statistics. He batted second in the lineup. When he had Bobby Dernier or Jerome Walton in front of him, he had almost MVP years.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden, if somebody on base, Ryne Sandberg murdered the inside fastball. That's the ball that put him in the Hall of Fame. Well, how many more inside fastballs are you going to get with a guy on first base dancing around out there like he might do something? Like a lot more, right? So it really makes a difference. But football is that much of a team game. That's why, you know, it's you put these people together, I mean, and all of a sudden they click as a group.
I mean, let me ask you this question. Joe Montana physically, you know, he's not like a Dan Marino. He's not like a John Elway. And what happens to San Francisco if you drop a Dan Elway in there, Dan Marino in there, or a John Elway? Do they win even more Super Bowls?
Montana had amazing skill set.
Well, and he did, but
he had anticipation. He could read defenses like there was no tomorrow.
But
he was mobile.
Elway's ability to scramble.
He had Elway's
knees, and his rocket arm. I mean,
yeah, he had a great arm, but his knees were debilitating after a few years.
Yeah, but I don't think that would have been an issue if he had been playing on a team loaded with the talent and the offensive system at the 49ers.
Right, but I mean, all you have to do is get tackled once, you could lose something. But Montana had a very unusual ability.
Hey, I think he's great. I mean,
no,
the guy
saying, when you asked me, I watched a guy play for a million times. He had ability. He could run left and throw as a righty, which very, very few people can.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very few people.
Typically, those are interceptions in the NFL.
Well, I mean, I'm saying most people, when they roll right, they can throw because they're right-handed, right? Yeah. He could actually throw pretty decently rolling left.
Yeah.
But no, physically. But he also was in an era where you could tee off on quarterbacks. So even though these guys are pretty tough dudes. I mean, you know, those days, you didn't let up when you were coming after a quarterback. I mean, he was not a big man. Was he 6'2", 185
maybe?
Yeah,
he wasn't big. He wasn't all that fast.
No.
And the thing that made him really good was he was still cool under pressure.
But he had a great offensive line. He had a good time. I mean, he had a really good team.
Yeah, you know, the contrast
he had
to
a
him
great
with,
coach. He had a great coach.
Contrasting him with Jace or Allen from Buffalo Bills last year in the playoffs. Allen, you know, I just think sometimes, Josh Allen, I think sometimes players are either made for the big moment or they're not. I think you're born with it. And last year in the playoffs, Allen could have won that game easily if he would have just checked off and dumped it underneath and got the first down. Instead, he rifles it into the end zone, and they have this long kick to get to the next, I think, get to overtime. If he just dumps it off and checks it down, they probably win the game, right? And Joe Montana would have made the right decision at that moment.
It has. You know? I mean, I first of all, I never played anything at that level, but played years and years at softball, and sometimes in pretty good leagues. And you know what? The pressure to me was it being the coach and general manager and everything is if you think you've got the team that can do it, all of a sudden your decisions are pretty good because all you keep thinking about, I mean, me pitching all the time, all I keep thinking about, don't walk anybody, don't make it easy for them, you've got the better team, just do your job and everybody else will do theirs.
Yeah, make them make the mistakes.
And the pressure, it's not on me, the pressure's on them. How the hell is this guy going to get a hit? If I put the ball where I'm supposed to, I'm supposed to, and by the way, they hit it to one of my guys, and they're not going to miss it. If you have that mentality, all of a sudden you're pretty tough to beat. If you sit there and
that's how Oregon State won those World Series.
But if you sit there and go, I better put it inside because my right fielder can't catch, or that kind of crap, and all of a sudden they know your right fielder can't catch, and they're launching it out there. It's, I mean, I think. You have to have this confidence at any level that the pressure's on them because you really are. You just do what you're supposed to do, and you tone everything else out. But it's really hard to do. It's really hard, especially because there can be chaos in football. I mean, the guy's not getting the play in the end time, so you're scrambling, and you wonder somebody just had the wrong assignment the last play. If I'm going to start worrying about him missing his block again, or I worry about what I'm supposed to do. There's all kind mentally, it's incredibly stuff going on. You know, I mean, this is in softball, let alone I can't imagine what it is a professional football player or a quarterback. I mean, if you're the tackle, you keep in a moment. I got my guy, I'm supposed to bang him this way, and then I head into the secretary. You just focus on what you're supposed to do. But it's so hard to get 11 people doing that.
Yeah.
I mean, how many people, how many times can you get people in your class all thinking the same way, for God's sake?
Yeah, it's tough, yeah. Well, it goes back to that Gonzaga-Baylor NCAA tournament championship game. I was number one in DraftKings that night, and Gonzaga had that tough, I think, overtime victory, emotional victory over UCLA in the Final Four. And Baylor, I think they kind of cruised to their semifinal game. And Baylor just always had this, like, 10-point lead, and Gonzaga couldn't shorten it, and their star point guard got into foul trouble early. They got down, and I kept thinking, if Gonzaga could hit two or three threes in a row and squeeze the lead, maybe Baylor would feel some pressure. But, man, Baylor that night, they felt no pressure. They were popping threes from 5 feet behind the three-point line, bottom of the net. They were just playing loose and pressure-free. If Gonzaga could have, you know, put some pressure on them, gotten that, gotten a, maybe a small lead, then I think Gonzaga wins it, and I win a big payout from DraftKings, right? But yeah, pressure. Some people are made for it.
Well, don't forget though. You mentioned earlier that when Kevin just tweeted in, thank you, Kevin. Don't ever think that because Montana doesn't look like some kind of a star, he could easily.
Oh no, the guy was tough.
He could easily have gone to scholarship or had a scholarship in basketball.
Yeah,
I mean Joe Theismann. Everybody says, well, he's a smaller guy. Joe Theismann was built like Kirk Douglas, for God's sake. And I would say, out of all the people I played basketball with, which is thousands, he could have been the quickest person for two or three steps I ever played against.
Yeah,
I mean his feet were like lightning.
Unfortunately, we don't get to observe a world where Marino is the quarterback of the 49ers. It would be interesting to see how that played out. It just would be interesting.
Well, sure. I mean, what if what's his name? If the father of the quarterbacks would not have been on New Orleans. He got his ass kicked.
Yeah.
Not Peyton. What was the old man's name? Archie Manning.
Yeah.
I mean, he was as good as anybody. He was probably better than the kids. And he had no line in front of him. Look what happened.
I think he was the reason why.
What's his name? You just mentioned him. The guy from Denver didn't go to Indianapolis. I'm not going somewhere without a line. End up like Archie Manning.
Or dropping Earl Campbell in one of these offenses today, where they're playing on field turf, where you know they count the numbers in the box, right? And if the numbers favor the run, then they run it, right? Otherwise, because when Earl Campbell played, he played on that AstroTurf, and everybody knew Earl's going to get it in the A gap or the B gap, right? They just knew, right? And they stacked that box, and he was still able to get. He missed two games, I think it was 1979, and he was still able to get 1,900 and I think 32 yards that season.
Yep.
In 14 games.
Well, they ran the ball 25, 30 times a game. Nobody does that now.
Yeah, they just knew that he was going to get the ball, right?
Well, it was hard to throw because you could ambush the receiver.
Yeah.
So I mean, it was a different game. It was a run.
I'd like to see him dropped in an offense like Kansas City and see what he does. It would be really fascinating.
Well, what would you do with all purpose? There are people that did everything better.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say the guy who did everything about what is it? The decathlon guy is about what 80 or 85% of the specialist in every one of his things. I'm gonna say the best all around football player I ever saw was Walter Payton.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Walter was so
talking about blocking, receiving, throwing, kicking.
Yeah.
Whatever it was, the guy could do. I mean, how many backs now are three down backs?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a few. But how many? But you take guy. Well, this guy.
Walter had some vertical leap too, didn't he?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm saying there was nothing the guy couldn't do, and yet.
Yeah.
So, but now how many people are three down backs?
Yeah.
When I say that, they're in there to run. Okay, but if it's a passing down, you got to get that guy the hell out of there. I mean, Peyton was in every play because if you need a passing receiver, there he was. By the way, if you need a blocker, there he was. He did all of it. But how many guys can do that?
Yeah, I think in terms of football players, he might be one of my top all-time football players. Just a great football player, great in every aspect of the game.
But if you wanted a running back for the day, I would probably take OJ over him. I'd surely take Jim Brown over him.
Yeah. Man, Jim Brown was a beast.
Well, Jim Brown was the top of the gene pool. I mean, he was one of the best. Was Ed Obradovich, who was a really good player. He's still alive, by the way. Good guy. He used to be on the Score. I think he lives in Michigan, somewhere over Michigan. But he said, We played against Jim Brown. The first thing he did, Jim Brown gets a ball. He whacks him. Down he goes. He goes, that guy's not so tough. And the announcer goes, second and three. He goes, what do you mean, three? I hit him. I hit him at the line of scrimmage. I didn't even know the guy carried me 7 yards. He was that strong. And he never came. He never came out of a
game. He probably blacked out for 10 seconds.
Yeah, he never came out of a game.
Yeah.
And you know, it was just. But those guys. I mean, OJ. I mean, how good was OJ? For God's sake.
Yeah.
I mean. Yeah. There was Rick Talon.
Well, they knew OJ was running the football, right? They weren't going to throw it. They just lined up and tried to stop him. Right.
Well, they had Rick Talander talked about OJ, and Rick Talander was a defensive back at Northwestern, and Northwestern's got nobody, right? Somehow or another, they scheduled Southern Cal, and in comes OJ, and Talander looks at the guy and he goes, "He's bigger than a lineman. He's faster than any of us." He goes, "His friggin' head, his helmet's bigger than anybody's on our team." He goes, "You try and tackle a guy, if you didn't have two or three, he just bounced off the dude." I mean, he goes, "He was fast, and if you could hit him, then he was a train."
Yeah.
You know, you put him on the field, and everybody knew. I mean, tell football stories. My buddy from Pullman was a great athlete, a guy named Bob Massa. They got him on our softball team, and we played a lot of football at Pullman, flag football and stuff. Bob was just he was on the Air Force softball team.
And by the way, OJ would be smiling, running over you.
Oh, God.
Run around, right?
But Bob played on the Air Force touch team, and they were supposedly – they used to fly this guy alone on a plane just to play ball, you know, just to get their team together, their all-star team. So they're down in Florida playing the Navy team in football. I don't know if it was flag or touch. He goes, "Our guys, we had the best team ever assembled in the services, and we're going to kick these guys' ass." We get there. They got this guy throwing the ball, and it's just exploding on people's chests. He's the biggest guy in the field. He's the fastest guy in the field. And I go, okay, who the hell is that guy? It was Staubach when he was in the Navy.
Really?
He goes, he was absolutely a one-man gang.
Huh.
He goes, he kicked our ass personally. All right, Al, we got this election. We've got stuff going on in the market. So much has been said. I don't know. Talk to Kenny about the numbers kind of don't lie. I don't know who you put. It's not like I think Trump's tax cut can go nowhere. I think her idea of giving people with mortgages, I think both sides have come to somewhat of a realization that every man is not doing so hot, and inflation is burying some people. And I don't know. And by the way, the deficit is massive. I don't know how. It's surprising to me on TV, and all you do is talk about the bull market can start again. I know they're putting more money in the system, so nominally we can get the market up. But what do they think is the deficit mean? We're never gonna stop this. We're gonna keep going until we fall off a cliff someplace, or what? I have no idea what the future holds here. Do you on election day?
Yeah, you know, I don't know what it holds either, but there's something going on in the polling that I find really interesting. The national poll basically has it at a dead heat. But when you look at the battleground state-level polls, they're in a dead heat. Those two things can't coexist because of the massive sizes of California, Illinois, New York.
But those states don't matter. They're already in a
I know, but what I'm saying is if the national poll is tied, according to Nate Silver, then Trump has like a 90% chance of winning the Electoral College. So that would suggest that the state level polls, saying it's tied in those states, in the battleground states, are inaccurate. If the battleground states are accurate, then the national poll should be 53% or 52% Kamala and 49% Trump.
But
the two can't be the same. The two can't be true.
But who's even going to waste a lot of effort to figure out whether California is 60% blue or 58? What's the difference?
Yeah. Well, all I'm saying is that the fact that the national polls are tied and the state-level polls in the battleground states are tied, that makes me think that, one, the pollsters are trying to get an election result that they want, or the media wants maximum eyeballs on the election. Because
I think both of those are true.
The two can't coexist, right?
Well, from the
if the national poll is right, history tells us that Trump's probably going to win the Electoral College. And then I got curious. I went into one of the polls, and I purposely picked the one that Trump was leading by 1.1%, 1.1 percentage point. It's the Atlas Intel poll. And I was looking through its general results, and I thought this was really interesting. They have they've oversampled college graduates, intentionally, unintentionally, it doesn't matter, right? I don't care about the intent. All I care about is that college graduates are oversampled, you know, relative to the population. They have 43.3% college students or college graduates in their poll, and the national average is 37.7%. Right, that's an oversample. And then you look at Black and Hispanic. I think those are undersampled in this poll. And then you look at female. Well, if females are up in this poll by about 5 percentage points.
Which, by the way, is probably not enough, because I've read that 7% of the voters are going to be female.
Yeah. So if men, Black men, Hispanic men, you know, according to a lot of articles I've read, they're tending toward Trump. If the Black and Hispanic numbers are undersampled and the college graduate is oversampled and men show up maybe 1 or 2 percentage points below females, this poll is telling me.
I think they're all very flooded. I have read stuff, again, I get stuff from people, that the Trump's people want a whole bunch of polls saying they're ahead by a little bit, so if they lose, they could say it had to be rigged. I don't know if I buy that, but I don't.
Well, I'm not interested in what the politicians are saying.
No, I'm just saying the polls are. But I mean, I don't know how you even, you know. But you can you and I could do this for a living if we wanted to.
Yeah.
You know the math, and I'm sneaky. I can be sneaky. If 95% of Black males normally vote blue, which I don't think it's that high. And all of a sudden, it's 90. We could write 100 articles talking about how Black men are moving towards Trump, but it's still 90. You can only go one way, right? When you got, I mean, I don't know. I guess we'll see. I just hope Carl's.
All I'm saying, Tom, is I don't think it's possible that the state level polls and battlegrounds are basically saying it's a tie, and at the national level, it's a tie.
I just don't
think that's possible.
I don't think the individual voting, just the regular election, I don't see there's any chance he wins that. Now, my question, the last one till next week, and hopefully all this will be done, how much does she have to win, or anybody for that matter, have to win the popular vote someday, if it's not this election, some election, how much does somebody have to win the popular vote by and lose the Electoral College vote before somebody says this isn't right?
Well, according to Nate Silvers, in order for her win probability to be greater than 50%, she has to win by 2 to 3 percentage points in the popular vote.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah. Right now, if the national poll is correct, if the national polling is correct, then it's a tie.
Well, but that presupposes if it's a crappy day in Chicago, like it is, why? And I'm a Harris supporter, which, you know, I'm still trying to figure out what I'm going to vote for. Why do we even walk down the block? In other words, whether she wins by 100,000 votes in California or 200,000, everybody in California knows it doesn't make any difference. So that's why if the popular vote meant something.
Tom, here's the difference this year. It's a woman of color running for the presidency.
I understand it.
And progressives in California and Illinois and New York want to vote for her. I don't see that vote being suppressed.
Okay,
at all.
I'm not saying this is one-sided. If all of a sudden I'm a, you know, I don't want to characterize, but if I'm in Idaho and I've got a, sorry, Hill, and I got a hemorrhoid this morning, which I don't, and I know the state's going to go Trump no matter what, do I really get on my horse and ride 5 miles?
I think in Idaho, knowing my friends and family, you know, the MAGA friends and family that I have in Idaho, I think yes, they're going to vote if they have hemorrhoids or they got a broken leg. They're going to find their way.
But there might be a local. But my point is, the people in the states that are told time and again from the beginning of the year that this is already going one way, whether you show or not, to prove it to you, we're not even spending money.
I think this year is different because of the inflation, the border.
You may think that, and you may be right, but
the fact that the Democrat is a female. So I think the progressive voters in California.
So you think that here's my piece of paper that I'm handing in to you. I think that if everybody knew their vote actually counted, the numbers in the states that are considered not in play, the total popular vote would be higher. You're going to tell me I'm wrong?
Oh, it would be.
Okay, that's all I'm saying.
It would be higher because the candidates would be campaigning in those states.
Well,
but this is what I'm saying. I don't think it's going to dip this year relative in California, New York, and Illinois. I don't think it's going to dip all that much because the progressives in those states want to cast the vote for.
I feel a lot different today in Illinois. We got a dash. If I might very well vote for you. If I feel a lot different about that if I actually thought that either one of these people needed my vote in Illinois. They don't.
Yeah. Well, North Carolina, they need our vote. And all I'm saying is if the national polls are correct and it's a dead heat, if it's a dead heat and the national polls are correct or close to a dead heat, then Trump wins the Electoral College vote with a probability of 92.1%. Those aren't my calculations.
Now, does Joe Biden have to tell him he'll stay in office for another 2 years until they figure this out?
Yeah, maybe.
God.
Well, the news media would love that because
every day. S&P futures up 6, Nasdaq futures up 28. What if he's probably so happy to be out in January? What if they tell him looks like you're in till June?
Yeah, but hey, CNN, ABC, Fox, they're gonna love that, man.
Oh man, back tomorrow, Stocks and Jobs. Hopefully, with a president, Ricky, nice job with all the different people coming in and out here. Again, we'll be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jobs.
That's all, folks.